My dad was born in India in 1950, a few years after India's independence. He was one of nine children, right smack in the middle, seven brothers and two sisters. His dad died when he was only 17 years old, which left all of the siblings to have to band together with their mother. Some of them had already married, and his youngest brother was not even 10 years old when all this happened. So after this, my dad, along with the rest of his brothers and sisters, became determined to help his family. And my dad especially held this singular focus on working hard for his education, ultimately for his family. Because of that dedication, he went from someone who didn't even have shoes until he was in high school to learn, go get a master's degree in Canada, and then ultimately come to the U.S. for a career in environmental engineering. Along the way, he helped all of his brothers and sisters to migrate to the United States. And at one point in our house, we had over 20 people living in there, uncles, aunts, cousins. It was pretty wild. But despite all the decades that he spent outside of India, his heart and soul always belonged there, and he was deeply religious and patriotic. As he became older and some of the pressures of family lessened, he started doing pilgrimages, including twice going around Mount Kailash, which is deep in the Himalayas mountains, a yatra which is at a significant elevation. He did that twice. This trip that he took last was also meant to be a tour of the temples throughout India, a celebration of a new one that had just opened up in the city of Ayodhya, which is the ancient birthplace of Lord Rama from Hinduism, and many older temples all along India, including in the south, in Kerala. This trip was not meant to be a last trip, but to all of us and his family, but most devastating to my mother, he died while on this trip. He died of acute on chronic kidney failure, this pathologic cascade that went from hyperkalemia, acidosis, and into cardiac arrest. After he died suddenly, I went back to Chicago to my childhood home, and as I was sorting through his paperwork within the house, I found his writing everywhere, on the back of envelopes, on random post-it notes, on tax documents. His handwriting was a sharp throwback to my childhood and flooded me with memories of my dad. His handwriting was always sharp, firm, straight. Even on post-it notes that had no lines to write on, he always managed to write straight. I always was so impressed and baffled by how he could do that. His handwriting was so unlike the loops and curves of the written language Gujarati, the way it looks in most Indian languages. Looking at it, his handwriting, it reminded me of the years spent teaching me trigonometry, sine, cosine, those sharp little boxes to demonstrate the angles. When I was learning how to drive years before iPhones, apps, Google Maps, he would draw maps for me so that I knew where I was going. Arrows to know the streets, right turn, left turn, easy sketches of the geographic layout of where I was going. I never got lost. I never wavered. And it was a visual reminder of who he was. He never wavered. He never was lost. Everything was a straight path for him, and he forged his way. I recognized his handwriting anywhere. In the years before this time, he went to the nephrologist regularly. He was a man in his 70s who had long-standing high blood pressure, diabetes, and now his creatinine was rising. But for some reason, despite being so smart, he couldn't understand why it was that he was going into acute on chronic renal failure. He would say things like, "I go to the gym regularly. I lift weights. Would a man whose kidneys are failing be able to do those things?" He took his medications for high blood pressure, diabetes. He had the most strict diet anywhere, aided by my mom. To me, as an emergency medicine doctor, it was only logical. A man in his 70s with chronic high blood pressure, chronic diabetes, of course you're going to develop renal insufficiency and ultimately renal failure. I tried to explain that to him. I tried to tell him that the kidney was fickle, that it was so sensitive, easily going into failure, improving at the slightest thing. But he scoffed at that idea that he was going into kidney failure, and he refused to even think about the idea of dialysis. There was no way in his life dialysis, that concept, would fit in. So in the time leading up to his kidney failure, instead of getting worked up for dialysis, getting access, a fistula, getting worked up, he went on a wild goose chase. He went to so many universities in the area of Chicago to talk to their transplant teams, to get on their transplant list. He got a renal biopsy twice because the first time there was the biopsy was insufficient to try to figure out why he was going into kidney failure. As if there was any other explanation other than the chronic medical problems that he had. One day he called me excited because my mom had apparently agreed to be a kidney donor for him. And I had to say to him, I don't know what transplant doctor would take her kidney. She's also in her 70s and she also has chronic high blood pressure and diabetes. Nothing I said could dampen his enthusiasm and his drive for getting on transplant lists. The tipping point, however, was in the few weeks that led up to his trip to India. He had a cyst that suddenly became infected, and his primary care doctor put him on antibiotics. Those antibiotics didn't work, and so he was given a second round of antibiotics that were, of course, nephrotoxic. His nephrologist did blood work, and at this point, the labs that he resulted shocked me. It wasn't that his creatinine was significantly worse. That was the case. But he was now really acidotic. His bicarb was so low. I thought for sure his doctor would demand that he get admitted immediately to the ER. I feel like I see patients like this every day on my shifts. But my dad fought him. And so instead of recommending admission or making my dad sign AMA paperwork, the nephrologist said, okay, you're insisting on going to India, fine. So he wrote him a script of prednisone and a taper to combat the nephrotoxicity from the antibiotics. My dad was excited because that meant he could go to India, and he promised his doctor that every week in India he would get his labs drawn so that they could check his creatinine, potassium, and bicarb. Before he left for his trip, I painstakingly wrote out the dosing of prednisone, what to take, how to taper it, and he promised me that he would take it and he would get his labs drawn. He got his labs drawn one time on his trip. When I called to ask him about it, he didn't even want to talk to me about it. Instead, he asked if I saw the latest photo dump that he had sent of the deities of the temple he had visited the day before, of the river where he and my mother were excitedly bathing, jumping up and down like children, the pictures of the beauty of India. And of course, I had seen every one of those. But what I had not seen was repeat blood work. And at that point, he wasn't going to talk to me about it. So given how excited he was and how well it seemed like he was feeling, I just let it go. Towards the end of the trip, my mom called me one early, early morning. Their time, evening time for me. She said that my dad had a fever and asked if he could take Tylenol. Of course he could take Tylenol, I said yes. I was worried. A few hours later, I called back, and my mom said he was sleeping, and I said, don't disturb him. A little bit after that, now much later in the evening for me, morning time for them in India, she called me on FaceTime so I could see them with the camera, except my mom had the camera at this angle where all I could see was like the junction between the nose, his nose and his mouth. And she was trying to get him to talk to me, but all I could hear was this crackling sound in the background. And I said, what are you doing? Stop crackling that paper bag. I cannot hear you. And my mom said to me, there's no paper bag. And I realized, that's his breathing. And I thought, oh my God, he's going into fluid overload. Was this fever sepsis pneumonia, fluid in his lungs? Or was this that the kidney finally gave up and all the fluid was now backing up into his lungs? And I told him, you need to leave that hotel right now and go to a hospital immediately. At this point in their travels, they were in Kerala, a state in which they're not from. They're from Gujarat. So they didn't know anyone. They don't even know the local language. And luckily in India, many people speak English. But they had to get a driver because they didn't know if there was a 911 system or an ambulance, which of course there wasn't. It took what felt like hours for them to find a driver. And then instead of going to the hospital, which was hours away, it turned out they spent the next few hours driving around trying to find any place to seek care. A clinic, a hospital. I kept calling back. My mom was giving me updates. At one point, she said that they were finally in the car and my dad had fallen asleep. She nudged him and he woke up and all he could say to me was, "No energy." And so I said, "Okay, please don't talk. Please get to a hospital right away." The next call I got was from a doctor. This doctor said to me that my dad's pupils were fixed and dilated. To which I said, "Are you doing chest compressions?" And he said, "No, ma'am." And I said, "Okay, well then what are you trying to tell me?" And he said, "I need an EKG." And I was like, "What do you need an EKG for? It sounds like he has already died." And he says, "But ma'am, we need an EKG to declare him death." And I just was astonished and aghast. And I was like, "Doctor, my dad has died." And finally I hung up. I don't know what he was trying to do. If he was trying to ask me for permission to allow him to declare my father dead, or if he was trying to tell me that my father had arrived to the hospital already dead so that I would not blame him for not doing anything. I don't know what it was. But I got my mom on the phone and I said to her, "Dad's dead. He died somewhere along the way on the trip. He slumped over. I don't know what the last words were that he said to her, but the last words he said to me was, 'No energy.'" And so the days that followed were horrible, a cacactic whirlwind for my mother. She had to navigate the system of having my father dead in India, where they are from India, but they were no longer Indian citizens. This because he died on the way to the hospital became a police case, and so they mandated an autopsy. And meanwhile, all she's trying to do is to get control of his body so that they can do a cremation and try to figure out when she could get back to her family because she was all alone out there. And the whole while asking me, what happened? What could have been done differently? And alternating it with saying, "Did he suffer?" And I said, "No, Mom, he didn't suffer." And at the end of the day, the only thing that we could get back to and say is, he died because he was called to India. And she told me that there's a concept in Hinduism where everybody preordained at their birth, the time and the place of their death is already known. Not to us, but to God. And no matter what you try to do or change, nothing you can do to stop that. My dad was driven to go to India, and he went under terrible circumstances knowing that his kidneys were failing. He went knowing that he should have started dialysis, but he refused. And so he went. The day before he died, he had visited the birthplace of Adi Shankaracharya, an important figure in Hinduism. And it brought him so much joy to have been there. And it brought my mother so much comfort knowing that he died after visiting the birthplace of Adi Shankaracharya. And to me, as painful as it was, knowing that if he had been in the U.S., it would have been a simple 911 call to get this respiratory distress, this acidosis under control. Instead, it spiraled and he went into cardiac arrest. But I know one thing. There was no chest compressions, no intubations, no IV lines. He died intact next to my mom. He essentially fell asleep and never woke up. And at the end of the day, I think that that is the best death that any of us could have hoped for. My dad was firm, strong, stubborn. And so many times in my life, we got into arguments over things that I wanted to do, he wanted to do. But for his death, he made his decision, he knew where he wanted to be, and he died intact with dignity. Thank you.